Welcome to Spoiler Piece Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Megan Kearns. My pronouns are she, her. I'm a contributor to Edge Media Network and a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
My name is Dave Riedel. My pronouns are he, him. I write about movies, and I am also a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
And my name is Evan Crean. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living, and my pronouns are he, him.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about some movies this week, like we do every week. But before we dive into the new releases or newer releases that we're going to be discussing, we want to let you know about our Patreon exclusive episode, and we do those weekly for our patrons. And this week we talked about the horror anthology Trick or Treat.
Woo!
It was a good time.
Yeah.
Fun conversation was had by all. So if you're a patron, go check it out. And if you're not a patron, maybe consider joining.
I would say it's worth it to join just because Evan and I both made up our own lyrics to the DuckTales theme song this week.
That is correct.
So just
and it was amazing and epic. So you really are missing out on the shenanigans.
That's true.
But who knows? Maybe there'll be some shenanigans on this episode. Who knows? Just have to tune in and find out. So this week, we're going to be talking about two horror movies. We're going to be talking about The Manor and Madres. And we're going to be talking about the crime thriller drama South of Heaven. So to kick things off, because it is the spooky holiday season, we're going to be talking about the Welcome to the Blumhouse series entry, The Horror, which is written and directed by Axel Carolyn and starring Barbara Hershey.
The Manor.
The Manor?
Didn't I say The Manor?
You said The Horror, but that's okay.
Oh.
It is a horror film. The Horror.
My apologies. It is not called The Horror. It is called The Manor, which I could have sworn I said, but thank you guys. This is why you guys are important. Well,
it's
for most reasons.
It's also possible that Evan and I misheard the same thing at the same time. That's possible too.
No, you probably didn't. I probably said The Horror. I'm a little off my game today.
That's all right. I'm off my game most days, so.
Yikes. But anyway, back to The Manor. So Barbara Hershey plays a woman who is 70, and she is about 70. She's 73 in real life. And she is, I was going to say she's put into a nursing home, but she actually agrees to go to a nursing home because at her birthday party, she passes out. And her daughter is very concerned about her even before then. And so she goes into a nursing home and she's not really happy about it because she's very independent and she doesn't want her independence thwarted. And she's very creative. She was a dancer and she's a very vibrant woman. And some strange shit starts happening at the nursing home.
Yeah. I can't remember. I know she says in the beginning that she has Parkinson's, but I can't remember if her passing out was a stroke or not. I don't think they were clear about that, but for sure she does. She decides that she wants to go to the nursing home, even though both her grandson and her daughter are like, no, we can take care of you. She's like, no, I don't want to be a burden. I'll just go do this.
No, I don't think the daughter doesn't say that. I think it's just the grandson. I think the daughter is just like, yeah, you should go.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah,
the daughter is kind of quick to ship her off, isn't she? Yeah.
Right. And no, she doesn't have Parkinson's beforehand. She's diagnosed with it in the nursing home.
She mentions it in the beginning of the movie.
Does she?
Yeah.
She does, yeah. I
don't remember. Okay, fair enough.
I can't remember how she... It's not like, I have Parkinson's. It's not like that. It's like, I don't remember how it goes, though.
Right. But then they tell her she has Parkinson's dementia based on a brain scan, which is not possible.
No.
Like, they can't tell you have dementia from a brain scan.
No.
The only way that you can actually know that is after you die and they look at your brain. It's a funny thing for them to try and claim that. Because like, they can tell if you have like some type of like issue going on with your brain, but they can't pin it to a specific diagnosis.
Right. Which is, but that's like kind of the crux, not the crux, part of the reason she thinks there's evil, nefarious stuff going on is because they just diagnose her with dementia. And she's like, wait a minute, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
So they're gaslighting her.
Yes.
So, because hey, just spoiler, because it's spoiler piece, they are gaslighting her. She's not like, I mean, she may have Parkinson's, but it's not an accurate diagnosis based on what you learn over the course of the movie, which is that everyone is evil.
And everyone's in on the evil.
Except for Liesl, who gets dispatched.
Yes.
Liesl is a
sick
a
leave,
nurse.
Quote unquote.
Yeah, sick forever.
I know. And she says that she's out for a couple weeks. I'm like, I think she's out permanently.
I think the tree may have eaten her. It's a Celtic thing, by the way, in case you couldn't tell by the trees eating people thing.
Yeah, that definitely was. I don't know. I think when I was going into this movie, you know, I'm like, okay, nursing home, gaslighting, you know, trying to convince this woman that, everything she's seeing isn't real. I guess I didn't consider Celtic magic and
witches
witches would be involved in the ultimate explanation. I figured some type of ghostly entity was terrorizing the nursing home, and people just didn't. Yeah, it's not the direction I expected to go in, but it was kind of a pleasant surprise that you have these like other residents of the nursing home that are witches and use this Celtic magic to sap the life force out of the residents there and then use that to be young once a night for 12 hours, right? No.
Yes.
Every night.
From midnight to dawn. Yep. Yeah.
Here's the problem I have with that, though. Would you really want to go hang out under the same tree every day forever, for eternity? And also, if you're going to have Bruce Davison be one of the witches, don't cast Bruce Davison, because the moment he pops up on screen, you're like, wait a minute, Bruce Davison's in this movie. Something strange is going on.
Yeah. Yeah. That
is very true.
It was a dead giveaway. He usually plays some type of villainous character, but we were laughing because like Shauna pegged most of the stuff in this like so early in the movie. She like immediately figured out what was going on. It was like, oh yeah, the residents are definitely the cause of this. Yeah. And then, oh look, that's them. They're young. Okay.
Totally. Well, they're so vibrant compared to everybody else that you know there's something strange.
And you guys are right, but that's the problem, is that shouldn't be an anomaly. The fact that older people are vibrant, like that's some bullshit, and that's some ageist bullshit. And that's what's really weird to me, because it's very clear from the premise of this film and from interviews I've read with Exile Carolyn that she's very concerned about ageism, and also like this was motivated by her personal experiences visiting people in nursing homes and kind of the fear of losing your independence and the infantilization of older people. So it feels like a really weird pivot to be like, well, the only people who are vibrant are the witches who are, you know, like leeching off of people. And I did not like this ending at all. It pissed
Neither
me off because, yeah, thank you, Dave. Because like, I really liked the film up until like the last 10 minutes, because I think Barbara Hershey is great in this. I think she gives a really fantastic performance. And I really like the issues it's exploring with ageism and infantilization and ableism and kind of everything that's happening, and it does a really great job of showing how she is gaslighted. But yeah, that ending, I was just like, nope.
Yeah.
Doesn't work. Doesn't all come together.
It's definitely a bold choice to have her and her grandson find out what's going on. And then because Bruce Davidson gets killed, they get in on it now and they can be forever young. I think that's a bold choice on their part. I agree with you. It's not my favorite way to end this, but I kind of get it at the same time. Like I could see the temptation in it, both from her perspective and her grandson's perspective, to like preserve this relationship that they have and be like, we'll just both be in on it now.
Yeah.
But see, here's the thing. I would agree with you. It is a bold choice. My problem is that it comes so late in the film and then it just wraps up so quickly. There's no real time. So everything I feel we know about her as a character, the protagonist, she wouldn't do this because she doesn't want to fuck over other people. So if you're going to have your character have a turn like that because it is so tempting, you got to give me more. You got to give me more than what's given.
Yeah. Also, especially because, I mean, maybe she's vain, maybe she's not, but it appears that she's not. I mean, this is a woman who's only 70. She's voluntarily checked herself into a nursing home because she can't do the things she used to do. Like, it's not like she's sitting around going, I used to be a dancer. She's like, well, I was a dancer. Now I can't do it anymore. You know, Mm-hmm. So it's very, very, and then she spent, you know, 75 minutes trying to figure out what the fuck is going on. Mm-hmm. And then when she kills Bruce Davison because she switches out the hair from the hairbrush, which is a whole thing we don't need to get into, but suffice it to say, there's fucking hair in a hairbrush and she switches it and then the tree eats Bruce Davison, which you can see coming a mile away, by the way.
Yes.
But then for her to just be, you know, those other two women to be like, no, you can stay young forever. The one who looks a lot like Florence Henderson, by the way, it's
she was just, Opal on All My Children, by the yeah. way. And I love that.
It's just, it is a bold choice. And I kind of like that it's a bold choice, but it kind of takes everything that came before it and just sort of pisses all over it.
Yes. You know? Thank you.
It really does. It's just like all that stuff we said about infantilizing old people and this, that, and the other. We don't believe that shit. She wants to be young. Fuck you. So it's like, yeah, all right.
And that's exactly my problem is that it feels like a betrayal of the character, feels like it's a betrayal of older people rather than just being like, no, older people are awesome. Older people are sexy or can be, you know, they're vibrant too. They're sharp too. You still have interests. You know, you don't die just because you're an older person. And so it just, yeah. So I liked the film so much just up until that point. I was like, no, but. Yeah. It is an interesting choice.
Yeah, it's a bold choice. And on and like I agree with you that there's definitely it does feel like a left turn for the character based on all of her previous behavior, but I did find it interesting that there was so little time to decide. They were kind of like and then all of a sudden the sigil just like appeared on their bodies.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, choice made apparently.
Yeah. And also, don't ever let someone throw your hair into the fire.
Nope. Just,
you know.
Hold on to your hairbrush.
Yeah. Or shave your head and then like flush it down the toilet. I don't know. I mean,
make I mean, sure that clog the toilet.
Yeah. Make sure that
eat your hair. Creature, I don't know.
Yeah. That tree creature looked pretty sinister too, you know? So
the tree creature was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked the tree creature.
It was creepy when it was crawling around her room, crawling around the ceiling.
Yep. Yeah. It was kind of giving me Green Knight. And the Babadook kind of had a baby vibes.
Hmm.
I see it.
Interesting.
Thank you. I'm glad somebody did.
I see that pairing.
Right? Right? They're soulmates.
Yeah.
But I will say the thing that I really like the most about it, well, besides Barbara Hershey's performance, but I really like that we do see such a vibrant older woman on screen because we don't see enough older people in general on screen, especially older women. And it's just great to see. And I want to see more older people.
It's also nice to see Barbara Hershey. I mean, mm-hmm. Where the hell has she been? I mean, she's been around.
Yeah, but, she's been in a bunch of stuff, but yeah. Not anything I've been watching, I guess.
Right, right.
But yes, it was really nice to see her. I completely agree with you, which is why I wanted to see this. I mean, one, I always love women-directed horror films and women-directed films in general, but especially I was like, oh, Barbara Hershey, I haven't seen her in a while, so I'd like to see this.
Yeah. She's in the Insidious movies. She's in like all of those. Not,
yes.
Yeah, and she was true. In, wasn't she in Black Swan? I think yes. She was.
I mean, that's a while ago, but yes, she was.
Yeah, so she's been around. She's mm-hmm. been doing things. She's, you know, selling hats and t-shirts, whatever.
Yeah. I will say, though, this movie can be really tough to watch at points, especially with the way that they gaslight her. And toward the end, when they physically restrain her in yes. her bed, that is really tough to watch.
That is.
Yes.
Seeing yeah. people, older people being abused in those ways. Like, mm-hmm. and earlier when you see them, like, forcibly putting people to bed, oof, that is not easy to see. So definitely, I would add that content warning.
I'm really glad you said that, Evan, because it was really difficult to watch. So yeah, so thank you for that. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, no I problem. Think this might be a nice double feature with Relic, which is not yeah. about gaslighting, but is also about aging.
Mm-hmm.
But do we have any final thoughts on The Manor, not the horror?
Yeah. No, I have final thoughts on the horror, but we're not discussing that this week. So,
I liked the art direction in this. I thought the yes. sets were really well done, well decorated. The rooms looked really cool. I love that kind of almost Shining-esque kind of pattern on the curtain between her and her roommate in their room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought that those aspects of the film, like the location, the art direction, all of that was really, really strong.
I agree. I'm actually really glad you brought that up too, because I really loved the opening credits and the artwork in the opening, the kind of drawings. And it's very kind of creepy. It's kind of, I can't think of his name. And I have some of his artwork. But anyway, there's an artist who does a lot of, or who used to do a lot of novel illustrations. And it's like very kind of creepy gothic looking. And it reminded me of that. But anyway, I liked that too. And I also was getting some kind of Red Shoes vibes at the very end when she's dancing in her ballet shoes again. And that's always nice because that's such a great film. But yeah, I agree with you. I like the art direction too.
Sweet.
All right. Well, let's move on to South of Heaven.
Or can we talk about the album by Slayer? Because that's a great record.
No. Oh, okay. But you gave it a plug, so there's that.
Yeah. Slow, yeah. Slayer. Slow being relative, by the way.
Sure.
I love... But getting back to the movie, South of Heaven, I loved that on the IMDb page, it is tagged action, crime, drama, horror, mystery, and thriller all in one.
Oh my God, that's ridiculous.
Wait a minute.
That's absurd. Although, we will get to, I can see kind of why someone tagged it all those things.
Yeah, I see it too.
Yeah. So this stars Jason Sudeikis, Evangeline Lilly, Shea Whigham, and Mike Coulter, and it is directed by... hopefully I'm going to pronounce this correctly. Aaron or Aharon?
Aharon, yeah, probably.
Kishalis. And it's written by him and Navat Papuchado and Kai Mark. And Jason Sudeikis plays a guy who has just gotten out of prison. He's been in prison for 12 years for armed robbery. And he tells us in the first few minutes at his parole hearing, not his parole hearing, but it is his early release hearing, that the love of his life, Annie, he has not married her yet because they were going to get married when he got out. And she has cancer and she only has 1 year to live. So he wants to get out so he can make it the best year of her life. And he does get out. They do reconnect, but some shit goes down because as much as he tries to leave his old life behind, his old life will not let him leave.
Well, yes and no.
I know.
It's a new old life.
It's a new old life.
It's an old new life. I don't know what you would call it.
Yeah. His parole officer, Shea Whigham, is not on the up and up. Yeah. As he suspected right away. And yeah, and then blackmails him into getting into more crime, which he does not want to do because he's trying to not go back to prison.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then he ends up accidentally crossing the local crime boss who's played by Mike Coulter. That's a whole interesting subplot into itself. He's out driving one night, drops his phone, stupidly goes to look down and get it, and then gets into a car crash with a motorcycle, and then takes that to his old buddy who runs a scrapyard, the dead motorcyclist, and tries to dispose of it, but turns out that guy was a courier for Mike Coulter, and he's missing $500,000.
Yeah, had a GPS device on the motorbike.
Yes. So.
Yeah. He's all about his GPS devices. That's one thing I'm sad about in the movie is that we never find out what happened to that $500,000. We don't know if the motorcyclist ever got it. We don't know if it went, flying over the side of the road and landed somewhere or someone took it. I'm bummed that we don't know what happens to that $500,000.
I was not bummed about that.
But I was not either.
I'll tell you what I was bummed about.
This movie?
This is a movie that is full of every I just got out of prison cliche that exists in movies. Yes. And every time they subvert one of those cliches, they introduce another cliche.
It's rapid fire.
It's like, all right, so, okay, prison parole officer or whatever, Shea Whigham, who is a very different character from he was. And what's the one where the
small engine repair,
thank you, that we just talked about. Mm-hmm. Very different character, very different performance. Good performance, by the way.
He's always good.
He is. Yeah. And
it surprised me how much I enjoyed him in both roles. I'm like, well, I guess I've been sleeping on this guy. He's actually pretty darn good.
Yeah.
He's great in Boardwalk Empire, too.
Yeah, they subvert they introduce the shifty parole officer and they subvert that with the Jason Sudeikis has to go pick up some money from some bad dudes who are going to kill Shea Whigham. So Jason Sudeikis, you know, that's why he's out driving. And then afterwards he hits the motorcyclist and then he takes the motorcyclist and you just, all right, so now you've killed someone. That's a different, you know, I just got out of prison cliche. So I'm going to go see my old prison buddy or my old, he's not a prison. Was he a prison buddy? I don't even know what his connection was to that guy with the scrapyard, yeah. By the way.
Yeah, I think they were prison buddies.
They were prison buddies. Okay.
So I thought they were buddies before they went to prison.
I thought so too. It was unclear to me. But Evan, why not?
But they could be prison buddies. Who knows?
They could be both.
That's true. They could. They could have gone in for the same crime.
So, you know, goes to see the old prison buddy, gets the old prison buddy. So trope, gets the old prison buddy in trouble. Trope, the bad guys show up and like abuse and kill the prison buddy. Trope. I mean, it's just trope after trope, after cliche after, I mean, it's amazing that every, I just got out of prison cliche is in this movie. It's stunning. In fact, and also there's the character with cancer who only exists to set the plot in motion.
Annie! So,
yeah, Annie. Who doesn't look like she's suffering even remotely. I'm guessing the diagnosis is very, very recent. She looks like she just got a pixie cut for the hell of it, not because she's had chemotherapy. So it's a very strange choice in a movie that's kind of gritty in lots of different ways. Like that, you know, whole cutting the throat scene and dying on top of the cake.
Yeah, that was a scene.
Yep. So it sounded like you two did not like this as much as I did.
Well, no, I didn't like this at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it was okay. I mean, I think
the only okay things were Jason Sudeikis and Evangeline Lilly. I think they had some really great moments together.
Here's the strange thing I felt like Jason Sudeikis was playing like, I just got out of prison character from Saturday Night Live. Like,
ooh.
I
buy that.
It was very sketch comedy, his performance to me.
I didn't think his performance was good. I thought he and Evangeline Lilly were good together. That's kind of different.
Oh, and the other thing that we forgot about, because apparently the filmmakers saw Shortcuts.
Kidnapping?
The kidnapping, but the kid who gets hit by the car, and then he's like, no, I'm fine. The kid's not fine. Mm-mm. Didn't you see Shortcuts? I mean, my God.
But wait a minute. I want to back up for a minute and talk about that kidnapping, the joint kidnapping, the double kidnapping, I'm going to kidnap your son because you kidnapped my cancer-stricken wife. Like, what the fuck?
It's an interesting choice. It actually kind of subverts the tropes for a moment.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, yeah. I mean, in so many ways, this is so formulaic and not well written in dialogue, characters, you name it. But the narrative is just fucking absurd. It's so absurd. Yeah. And like, I think you have enough drama focusing on, hey, the love of my life is dying. Hey, I just got out of prison. Like, why are we jamming in like 50 other genre elements in here? It just doesn't work.
And one very cool shootout at the end that I don't believe Jason Sudeikis could pull off his character.
I'm so glad you said that because speaking of other things I did, that scene is amazing. The score is tense, good cinematography, great use of space. And Jason Sudeikis is a killing machine. Like when, I know he went to prison for armed robbery, but when the fuck did he become an assassin?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, damn. You know,
he just get mortally wounded in that fight. Yeah. So, I mean, he's not that good. He gets shot multiple times and ends up succumbing to his wounds, which...
Yeah.
This is a super sad ending.
Super sad ending because, for one, he kills the main bad guy whose kid is in a coma. So what's going to happen? I mean, presumably somebody heard the gunshots and will call the police. I don't know.
Maybe.
But like, otherwise that kid is going, or, you know, he's not going to show up for you can't really transport someone in a coma like that to the hospital for a checkup. So maybe the doctor's going to come see him and they'll be like, oh, look at all these bodies in the yard. And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's definitely something.
But then, I mean, the whole, like, all of a sudden we have magical realism at the end of the movie where Jason Sudeikis imagines himself finding Evangeline Lilly again, but he's actually dead in a dinghy in the middle of the water. I mean, come on. Make up your mind, you fucking movie. I didn't misread that, right? He imagined the whole thing and then he dies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was dead in the boat. It's just, it's a fucking bummer of an ending.
It is. It really, really is.
Like, after all of that, because, like, I did not hate this. I really enjoyed this. And I think what the parts that I enjoyed are some of the things that you're both pointing out. I think this was an extremely tense movie in ways that I was really not expecting it to be. Like, maybe could have been a little less torture, but like, because those scenes were like really rough to watch. Like when his buddy is getting tortured by Mike Coulter, who, yeah. By the way, I really enjoy him on The Good Wife as the local, you know, kingpin. And he has this great ability to go from being perfectly nice and approachable to extremely intimidating at the drop of a dime, and I think he does it well on that show, and I think he does this well here, where he can seem like a perfectly reasonable nice guy and then just be so fucking scary. And the scenes that he's in, I feel like he scares the shit out of me. But also the scene where Jason Sudeikis goes to get the money and those guys are ready to kill Shea Whigham, and one of those guys has the Sawzall that he's ready to attack Jason Sudeikis with, and Jason Sudeikis gets it and is holding it to a guy's neck while another guy with like an Uzi is standing behind him ready to shoot him. It's just, there's so many scenes that are just, that was like, a tense for me, nail-bitingly tense in this movie. And so between cliches, I was just so riveted during those scenes, and I liked the exchanges between the characters. Like, I thought they had good chemistry, like Evangeline Lilly and Jason Sudeikis together. But then I also liked the dual kidnappings and seeing the different interactions playing out between Jason Sudeikis and the kid and Evangeline Lilly and Mike Coulter. Like, I like the way that scene was set up, the way they're sitting so far across from each other and then they end up smoking a joint together. I don't know. There's something to me that I enjoyed about those interactions between the two sets of people that felt human, real in a weird way, despite the fucked up circumstances.
The only thing that stuck out to me is something that I truly appreciate, aside from the scene where Jason Sudeikis becomes a fucking mad gunner killer, was the Mike Coulter character has that, he, when he's smoking the joint with Evangeline Lilly, he uses that terrible cliche line, which I think he's using it as a cliche. I don't think the writers said like, oh, this is a great line. He says, don't do the crime if you can't do the time. And then he gets shot to death at the end. And it's like, well, you're doing the time now forever, dirt nap. So, you know.
He predicted it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, I think guys in that position that think that they're untouchable, like, kind of also realize that at some point they'll... like they're not gonna live forever.
Yeah. I also, there is the scene where Evangeline Lilly does shoot that guy to death in perfect self-defense. No, but
oh, that was a good scene too.
That was a good scene. That scene was actually tense, and I kept wondering, it's like, all right, they're going around to the back of the house and Jason Sudeikis runs like he's never run in his life, so he's not gonna make it to the house in time. So when she shoots that guy in the ankle or whatever she does, I just thought, oh, okay, she's downed him. And then he doubles over and she shoots him in the head. But then she acts like nothing happened. She's just like, I just shot a guy in the head, whatever. I'm married to a fucking ex-con, whatever. And then Jason Sudeikis does that thing that both of you have criticized in the last couple weeks. He doesn't pick up that guy's shotgun.
No, nope. Right. Nope, he doesn't.
Right. I
but he does shoot Michael Paré in the face.
That's true. Shoots him right through the face.
Well, here's my question, and this is probably an ageist question, and which is interesting coming off of the last film we just talked about. But why are you so Michael Paré is 63 years old. Why are you having henchmen in their 60s? It's weird. It's a weird choice.
Because he was Eddie from Eddie and the Cruisers. I mean, of course you're going to have Michael Paré, come on.
I mean, Eddie lives, really.
Yeah.
but yeah, I don't know. There was something interesting about the like gritty older henchman, especially because he had that weird affection for the kid. Like when the kid's like, oh, come on, let me go plant the tracking device with you. He's like, I'm really not supposed to, but I can't say no to you.
Yeah.
I also like when he's like eating the meal, like out of the bowl, like when his friend is getting tortured.
Right.
Oh, yeah. When he grabs a cereal bowl from the junkyard guy.
And you notice he's eating onion rings, too, when the final like switch of kidnapping victims takes place.
That's right.
I didn't realize it was onion rings. Nice.
Yeah. He's the only one who's eating. There's like a basket of food in front of him and you see him eat an onion ring.
I will say that is actually a nice touch because I remember someone was talking about this at a talk or a lecture that I attended where they talked about when you see people on screen doing kind of like basic human things like eating or taking a shower, or going to the bathroom, it kind of lends some humanity to them. And so I will say that actually is a strange touch kind of that he's the only one eating, but I kind of liked that. So I did like that too. So that's the thing. Like there are things I liked. But for me, this was just, it was just such a mess that it just didn't, yeah. Overall, yeah. Did not enjoy. But I'm glad you did, Evan. I really do. I wish I'd had that experience you did.
Yeah, yeah. I'm bummed that you both didn't, but I'm still had fun talking about the movie anyway.
Oh, yeah. And that last shootout is amazing.
Yeah. It's a nice, efficient, there's some good camera work in there. Yes. And oh, by the way, when we forgot to mention that Jason Sudeikis severs somebody's Achilles tendon. So yikes.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a shock when that happened. I was not expecting that.
Neither was I. I was like, oh, did he become Gage Creed from Pet Sematary? What's this? This is crazy.
I have, oh my God. The fact that you just said that, that was the most gory scene from Pet Sematary. I still think about that scene.
Yeah, it's nasty.
When I saw it at like 10 years old.
Yeah, I saw it when I was like 13. So I was like, gross. Anyway.
Yeah, it was gross. But anyway, do we have any other thoughts about South of Heaven?
No, but there's a movie written and directed by Dwight Yoakam called South of Heaven, West of Hell. That has nothing to do with this, by the way. I just thought I'd mention that.
Do you recommend that movie?
Not really. It's when Vince Vaughn was trying to do drama. So,
oh,
yeah, you know, I think he's in it. I can't remember. It's not a good movie.
Evan, did you have any final thoughts?
No, but I have a new thought that, yeah, I don't know that I generally associate Dwight Yoakam with quality films.
Certainly based on Cry Macho, you know?
Right. I like seeing him. I just don't know if I attach quality with
He's in Panic Room. Panic Room's a good movie. Yeah.
Panic Room is amazing. I love Panic Room. Good, yep. Good.
I've never seen it. I should check it
you
out.
You need to. You it's should so see it. Good.
You would dig it talking about tense moments, man.
Oh my God. Why aren't we talking about that on the Patreon? We should.
Yeah, we should do that. Note to selves.
Yeah, that's an amazing film. I love
like
it.
Like we could record these notes and listen to them later.
Hey. Imagine that.
Oh my God.
Technology. It's fun. All right. Well, let's talk about our final film and a horror film. Yay. Madres.
Boo. Sorry.
Jesus.
I'm just kidding. I didn't dislike it. I'm just being an asshole. I'm sorry.
You just jumped right in with that boo.
I know.
I know. I didn't even like get a sentence out of my mouth.
I haven't done it in months and I felt like also months. Because it's almost Halloween, boo, you know.
You thought it was appropriate.
I did. Sorry. Sorry.
Okay, but back to Madres. It is another Welcome to the Bloomhouse film. And this one is directed by Ryan Saragossa, written by Mario Mischione, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, and Marcella Ochoa. And it stars Ariana Guerra, Tanakh Huerta, and Elpidia Carrillo. And this takes place in the 70s, and it's about a Mexican couple, one who is Mexican, the other who is Mexican-American, and they're about to have a baby. And they move from LA to a little town, and some weird shit goes down.
Golden Valley.
Golden Valley. Like
yeah.
Yeah.
And she starts seeing visions, scary visions, weird things, no yeah. children. No one's pregnant except for another woman and her.
Mm-hmm. Gross animal body parts hanging from yes. bloody bags eyeballs. In a tree in her yard. Yeah. Creepy music box in her house.
Oh my God, that creepy music necklaces. Box is great.
You know, witchy storekeeper who wants to give her amulets for protection.
Yes, all of that.
articles about pesticides hidden in boxes.
Yes, yeah. And how they affect farm workers.
And also gaslighting.
Yes, more gaslighting.
That seems to be a theme with this week's Blumhouse movies.
Yes. Well, women are often gaslighted. So. Yeah.
By the way, I know I can't be the first person who's thought of this, but has anybody done like, welcome to the Blumhouse? Anybody like, nothing?
If not, I fully support it.
Okay.
Ditto.
They do got fun and games, so.
We've got horror and things.
We got horror and things. We got all the stabs you want. We got all the brains splattered on the wall and hair in the fire. Tree demons eating you on that funeral pyre in the Bloom House. Okay.
Dave, I'm so impressed.
Welcome to the Bloom House. I know. Stream
folks,
of consciousness.
He did not write these lyrics in advance. This is on the fly.
That's true. I mean, this is
he
this
did not
is,
workshop that song with us before we recorded, just so you
52
know.
52 episodes a year. Score one for me. Okay.
Dave, I'm very impressed. That was amazing.
Thanks very much.
I don't even know what we're talking about. What are we talking about?
Talking
oh, Madres.
About Madres.
I was like, I don't even know what's happening. So what did you guys think of this film?
I kind of liked it, despite the fact that it has some, I wouldn't say they're major problems, but it has problems. Like the kind of pedestrian camera work, the score is not very effective, I didn't think, and there's a few too many jump scares. But I did like the way in the end, the visions that she was having, the dead woman or whoever that was actually trying to help her, not... Yes. Not kill her or do whatever. She was like, no, there's people fucking with you.
Which very is, like the power that we saw.
Mm. Yeah. I thought the performances were good too. I thought Beto was really good.
Tanakh Huerta, he's always great.
He's a really fine actor. And
He is.
Ariana Guerra, I thought was good too. And since they are like the crux of this story, good thing. And, you know, I think the problem that what this is, and this happens in a lot of horror movies for me anyway, you know, you get into the tropes and things like that. And so when you get the doctor and the two nurses who are just so, they're benevolent, but in an eerie way, you're just like, what's your game? What's your line in this, doc and nurse Carol?
Well, the fact that there are only three people who work there, that was a huge red flag.
Yeah, that's weird.
Right. Yeah, this sleepy little clinic.
And also, here, sign this piece of paper, woman who can't read English. Creepy.
Oh, my God.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, the insistence on signing a paper while her husband's not there. That was the... Woof. Scary. I really like this. And I think it's because it went some places that I wasn't necessarily expecting. In a way, at the end, too, when it kind of ties everything back to real life, I was really not expecting that in a, like a devastating gut punch kind of way that just made the proceedings that much more memorable in my mind and stuck out to me.
Yeah, I agree. You know, making the whole thing about like, you know, racism worked for me in a way that I didn't. But I didn't expect that. I didn't expect them to be sterilizing women because they don't want more Mexicans in the country. You know, so it's like, oh my God, how topical.
Because they set up this like supernatural angle of like, oh, maybe there's some type of haunting curse associated with this town. And then there's this idea of pesticides and you know, the husband working on this farm where they're spraying tons of pesticides and these articles about pesticides and their effect. And you're thinking, okay, like this is a movie about, you know, Mexican people being treated as disposable farm workers and screw them, give them pesticides, who cares? But then when it gets to the part later where you're like, no, this isn't a curse. It's not supernatural. And also it's not about the pesticides. It's about this doctor on this crusade to forcibly sterilize women so they can't have babies. That to me, I don't know. I feel like that was so strong of a thing to talk about and to then bring it back at the end with the title cards talking about how much this has happened in real life, these forced sterilizations. Mm-hmm. Just for me, it hit that much harder.
Yeah, I also really liked this a lot too. And I agree with everything you guys have said as far as, you're right, Dave, that some of the like the camera work and the score yeah, they're kind of, you know, whatever kind of pedestrian. I agree.
Yeah, serviceable, but meh.
Yeah, they're fine. I mean, I hate to say it, but I kind of expect that in a Welcome to the Blumhouse film. They're, you know, they're kind of, they're low budge. They're cranking them out. But yeah, so, but I agree that the performances are great. And that's really where this, I think the film really hinges on those performances. And I completely agree with you, Evan. That's what I loved so much, was I loved how it explores, you know, the reproductive justice issue of racist sterilization of, you know, women of color. And in this film, particularly of, you know, Latinx people. And I also really liked how the ending ties back to what's, you know, to what happened in, you know, to women of today at the border being forcibly sterilized and having their organ, their reproductive organs removed. And also it felt very Black Klansman, and how that is also set in the '70s and then brings it up to the racism and Trump of today. And I really think it was a very, very smart, impactful move. And it comes right at the end, like the very end of the film, where you find that out, where there's that revelation. And then the way in the title cards and in the news footage. But I think it was really effective. Like, it's really a gut punch. And like you said, Evan, and I think it was just really, really great. And racist sterilization and eugenics is something that I've known about for a long time because of the repro justice movement. But seeing a story about it, especially a horror story, is not one I've seen. And I love pregnancy horror, and I love that it went this angle. And it's interesting. And the, you know, it, the quote that opens the film is about, you know, you don't, something to the effect of, you don't need supernatural, you don't need to believe in supernatural evils because men, humans are evil as it is. And I think that's very fitting and very true and appropriate. And I just really liked this film a lot.
Yeah. Note to the Abraham Lincoln vampire hunter people. If you're going to make racism the like the central plot point of your horror movie, this is the way to do it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I also want to say, I do think as much as it works as a horror film, I found myself the moments I enjoyed the most were actually not the horror moments. I think this works on several different levels. And I think the characters are well written. And I also really liked the exploration of how the protagonist, she is Latina, but she doesn't speak Spanish, and how she navigates a Spanish-speaking community and how she's judged for not speaking Spanish by some of the other women. And it's just, it is, I think that's a really compelling story too, and not one that we see often enough on screen.
Agreed. Yeah, I found that part of the film compelling. And I know you both said that there were some kind of pedestrian choices, but I think there were some interesting storytelling choices too that I really enjoyed. Like the part where she was flipping through the medical records, and there was the projection on the wall of the people's records.
Yeah, that was cool, actually.
The woman in front of the projection talking, like where it's like kind of splashed across her face. I thought that was a really creative choice. And
it was.
I thought that was really well done. Just like the scene I thought was also well done when she was wandering the kind of stacks in the record room. I just thought the way that that was shot was really well done to convey this sense of claustrophobia and the idea of, like Dave, you were saying earlier about the ghost Teresa is helping her and leading her toward this information. So she hears the music coming from the box that she knows now that she needs to look in to find the information to start unraveling what's going on in this situation.
Yeah.
I really liked those moments too. And I'm so glad that you brought them up because they were really visually great. And the one where she's like looking through, where she's doing the research, I loved the multiple images on the screen because it's set in the 70s and that's such a 70s touch.
Oh, the split screen stuff?
Yes, where she's, it wasn't just split screen though, because there's like three images at once. But yes, like it's kind of, but it was great. So it's like sort of split screen. But yeah, that was so great. I liked that a lot too. And I agree. I loved the women talking about their sterilizations in front of the screen was really great too.
Yeah, that was a good touch, which I had forgotten effective. About.
Very effective. And I'm glad you brought that up, Evan. So thank you.
Yay, Evan.
No prob.
Yay.
You know, they actually packed a lot into this 83 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah. Shockingly.
But also, hey, people who made South of Heaven, this is how you subvert tropes, by the way, when you bring them up. Just everyone take notes this week. Okay.
Dave, filmmaking class 101.
That's right.
Screenwriting class.
We used to have Dr. Chris Screen Doctor or whatever he called his segment. And I've just got take a lesson. That's my segment. So take a lesson, filmmakers.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this many, many, many times, so this is not going to come as a surprise to anyone who has heard me talk for even a few minutes, but I love political, I mean, horror is such a political genre anyway, but I love when it embraces politics even more and social justice, and especially in such an effective way where you have compelling characters that you're invested in and you're kind of educating people about this very serious issue historically and in the present. And I think it worked really, really well. And it's an enjoyable film. I really liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cosign. That's what I do now. I cosign.
All right. Let's recap. The Manor. You can watch that on Amazon Prime. Would we say see it?
Sure.
Yeah, I would say see it, but then also keep in mind my previous content warning about knowing what you're getting into in terms of seeing older people in situations where they're being mistreated.
Right.
Yes, I would agree with that. And I would also say see it. Even though I didn't like the last 10 minutes, it's still a good film up until then. So I'd still say see it as well. South of Heaven. That is playing on streaming. That is streaming on VOD. So you can rent that online. Would we say see it?
Yes? Question mark. I mean, it's a qualified yes for me.
And I would say it's no, except watch that one scene, the one shootout scene.
Evan? It's an unqualified yes for me. I really enjoyed it, so I'd say see it.
All right. Have some dissent. I love it. And Madres. I think we would all say see it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yay!
That's also on Amazon Prime.
It sure is. So watch that right now if you haven't already.
My single, Welcome to the Blue House, will be available on Riedel Records in 2 weeks.
Riedel Records. A new pressing from Riedel Records.
That's right.
He's releasing this to vinyl, by the way.
First Friday in November, it'll be out.
I'm going to look for it. It better be there.
Signed copies.
Ooh, yeah. That's fancy. Well, in addition to Riedel Records, I want to give a huge thank you to our amazing editor, Otto Klammer, who you can follow on Instagram at Otto Klammer. So thank you, Otto, so much for always making us sound great week after week.
Thank you.
Thanks, Otto.
You can find Spoiler Piece Theater anywhere you get podcasts. We are literally everywhere. You can also find us at our website, spoilerpiece.com. You can follow us on social media. We're all over the place there, too. We're just everywhere. You can find us on Facebook. We're Spoiler Piece Theater on Facebook. We're at Spoiler Piece on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Letterboxd. So come and join us. Follow us at all of the places. If you want to reach out to us and tell us, no, South of Heaven is the greatest film. Evan is right. And Megan and Dave, you are wrong. Or you also really loved Madres too. You can email us at spoilerpiece@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call
at 862-21-PIECE. I'm sorry, Evan. You were going to do it this week, and I blew it.
It's okay. They know the number. They know how to get in touch with us.
That is the important thing. And you can leave us a voicemail message. You can also text us. So basically, you can reach us in all of the ways, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And we love hearing from you. We love hearing your comments and feedback. If you like the show, please rate and review us by going to ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece. You can also rate us on Apple Podcasts. That helps us out tremendously, gets out the word about the show. And if you really, really like the show, consider joining our Patreon. This week, we talked about the horror anthology film Trick or Treat, and we put out weekly episodes every single week for our patrons. And you also get access to our massive back catalog of bonus episodes.
And patrons, there's a poll this week, so vote.
Yes. And that's another thing too, is that if you're not a patron, sign up for $5 a month. You get to vote in polls and listen to the bonus episodes. And the poll this month is a good one about Frankenstein movies, Dr. Frankenstein and the creature. Because we know who is Frankenstein here.
We do. Lots of people don't, but we do.
Correct. So thank you, listeners. Thank you, patrons. My name is Megan Kearns. I'm a contributor to Edge Media Network. I'm also a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. You can follow me on Twitter at OpinionSWorld and on Instagram and Letterboxd at TheOpinionS.
My name is Dave Riedel. I write about movies, and I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and I am all over the social medias as Dave Sees Movies on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd.
And my name is Evan Crean. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Real Recon, and that's real as in film reel.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.